Hello and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2008 AAAS Annual Meeting in Boston, Massachusetts. It's February 15th. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, we'll hear about efforts to help children with autism learn social behavior by interacting with and controlling a virtual child. I'm talking with Justine Cassell from Northwestern University about virtual children and autism. Now, I understand you started first in virtual children and then went to autism. Why virtual children in the first place?
I've been working on virtual children that I often call virtual peers for quite some time because I believe that, I know that from the literature on children's development, there are situations in which children learn better from other children than from adults. And yet, the vast majority of the technology for children is built as a tutor, as an adult, in some sense pouring knowledge into the child. I know the power of peers pushing one another to learn, and I was interested in seeing whether that peer interaction could be translated to child technology interaction.
Now, given the demonstrations, some of which we got to see today, it seems as if that's happening. Here's a sample from your presentation.
Got the ingredients.
So the virtual child has talked about baking cookies.
And a recipe
and this
book.
Child with autism follows on. They got the ingredients.
Baked chocolate chip cookies. Cool.
So you can see it's quite a difference than the previous interaction.
How did you decide to apply that technology, that kind of peer pushing one another to autistic children?
Truthfully, every time I've given a talk about virtual children for the last 12 years, someone has come up to me afterwards and said, "I have a child with autism. Please give me a copy of your software. I know that it would be helpful with my son or daughter." And that was striking to me. I didn't understand it for a long time. And then a colleague of mine began describing the population of children who have Asperger's or high-functioning autism in terms that made it seem particularly interesting to somebody like me who studies the interaction between discourse, pragmatics, and nonverbal behavior. That is how people use language, but also how they use their bodies. And this colleague of mine said, you should really look at children with high-functioning autism. They know how to talk. They can describe the world. They're smart, but they don't have the same use of their bodies and the same use of language in the service of social interaction as typically developing children do. That sent me to look at the phenomenon of autism, and from there, remembering all the years in which parents had asked me to make this software available, I began to study how virtual children could be used to help children with autism.
How does the virtual child push the child with autistic spectrum disorder?
In fact, it's not really that the virtual child pushes the child with autism. It's more that the virtual child models, elicits, and scaffolds. What I mean by that is the virtual child behaves in ways that typically developing children do, such that the child with autism can watch and observe those behaviors without the fear or the difficulty of an interaction with a real child.
Okay. Again, here's a sample from your presentation.
Want to make up another story?
Yes. You're right.
Let's pretend there was a boy called Ben.
That's the modeling. The eliciting is the virtual child is better often than real children at saying, what happened next? Endlessly, if needed. What happened next? And then what happened? Tell me what happened after that. And so the child with autism is really encouraged to add contingent utterances, to add utterances to the story. And finally, the virtual child scaffolds the interactions of the child with autism by allowing the child with autism first not to do such a good job and then to do an increasingly good job and to watch the outcomes of doing a better job on social interaction.
You showed us a video where the virtual child was not only interacting, but was being controlled by the child with autistic spectrum disorder.
That's correct.
Let's hear a bit of that again from your presentation with the instructor teaching the autistic child how to control the virtual child, Sam.
What should Sam say? Okay. I'm going to start.
Okay, press that button.
Okay, I'm going to start.
Okay.
What does Sam say next?
Wanda makes up story together.
Okay.
Wanna make up a story together?
Yeah, that sounds really fun.
In our newest research, we're looking at how the child with autism can take the control panel for the virtual child and almost like a virtual puppeteer can control what social actions the virtual child performs, watching all the while the virtual child interacts with another real child. So the child with autism is sitting in one room with a control panel and a little screen on which is shown what's going on in the next room. And in the next room, another child is playing with the virtual child. The child with autism gets to decide at each point what the virtual child does. And we see it as a way for the child with autism to hypothesis test, to say to himself or herself, what would happen if I said, now you go? What effect is that going to have on the real child? And this is a kind of scaffolding. It allows the child with autism to practice engaging in social interaction without the negative consequences of messing that up in the real world.
Sort of a surrogate interaction, if you will.
It is like a surrogate interaction. One of my colleagues gave me a wonderful term for this. She said that what I was creating was distributed personhood. So that the virtual child is taking on some of the work of being a person in social interaction, allowing the child with autism to concentrate on what he or she does well and to practice those other aspects in a safe environment.
Now, your colleague's choice of term is distributed personhood. Is it likely that it is easier for the autistic child to control a virtual person rather than interact with a real one?
Initially, it may be easier for the child with autism to control social interaction as carried out by a virtual child than to control social interaction as carried out by himself or herself. That seems to be the case. The DSM-4 criteria for diagnosing autism state that you look for deficits in social interaction, the inability to do exactly the things that the virtual peer does.
Have you done any research on how well it actually works in getting the autistic child to interact with real people?
For the moment, we only have anecdotal data on how children with autism do when they control the virtual child. And second of all, what we're most interested in, we only have anecdotal data on what happens in subsequent real interactions after the child with autism has controlled the virtual child. Now, anecdotally, what we see is that the children with autism love doing this. They love controlling the virtual child. They love practicing different ways of engaging in social interaction. And surprisingly to us, they're very, very good at it. They choose exactly the right actions, which to us says that they're perhaps not as bad at reciprocal social interaction as we think when we only see them in the real world with real children. Now we're just starting a longitudinal study to see whether using this control panel will allow them to do better at social interaction with real children. And, of course, a longitudinal study like that will end with us watching those children with autism when they interact with another real child. Because the very important question to ask is, does their use of a virtual child result in better interaction with a real child? Does it transfer? Because that, after all, is what we care about. We want these children to be able to live in the real world, enjoying the fruits of social interaction with other real children.
Justine Cassell, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Justine Cassell is professor and director of the Center of Technology and Social Behavior at Northwestern University. This has been a special science podcast from the 2008 AAAS Annual Meeting in Boston, Massachusetts. The show is a production of Science Magazine and AAAS, the Science Society. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.